Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Life expectancy is at a record high as of 2012. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say men are living an average of 76.4 years. Women are living an average of 81.2 years. We have two remarkable women in the studio with us today who have shattered those numbers. Haiti McKinley is with us, and she will be 95 years old next month. She's done it a lot in her 95 years. She's a heralded social worker. She started with a daring escape from Nazi-occupied Austria in 1938. Also in the studio is Eleanor Aronstein. Eleanor founded the Capital Region Chapter of the Final Exit Network, an organization dedicated to end-of-life issues and death with dignity. She's also made the most of a long life, earning 4 degrees, teaching high school and college history and Spanish for 30 years, staying happily married for 57 years. So, should we have the right to do a final exit on our own terms? That's the question I'm asking all of you. And I truly want you to check in on this. This is a very important subject. Now, by way of disclosure, I think it's only fair with me as the host of the program, I have to tell you that the Chartoks have been sending money to various groups for years on this issue because we feel so strongly about it. But that doesn't mean we don't welcome anybody calling the program today and giving the other side. So let's start, of course, with Eleanor Aronstein. Eleanor, so how did you get into this?
Well, I loved my mother very much, and in 1971, my mother was afflicted with ovarian cancer. And while treatments were very primitive in 1971, the next 11 months were horrible. She suffered unspeakable pain and agony, and I watched this and was powerless.
Where was the site? I mean, how did
my mother was in Florida. I was in Poughkeepsie, New York, raising 3 little boys and flying from Poughkeepsie to Florida to be with her as much as I could. It was a very traumatic period for me, but it was more traumatic for my mother because at that time, death and dying were taboo subjects. You didn't talk about it. We used to think of sex as the last taboo subject, but it's really been death. Nobody leaves this planet alive. Everybody has to die, and I think it's a very recent, within the last 20 to 30 years, phenomenon that people want to take some control if they cannot have a peaceful, pain-free death, that at least they should be able to have, as a basic human right, some physician aid in dying. And so there have been tremendous growth in organizations that support that. But 20 years after my mother had this excruciatingly miserable death, I had to euthanize my beloved golden retriever. I held her. I cried over her. And the veterinarian gently inserted a needle, and the dog slipped away peacefully in my arms. And I thought, why can't people have that right?
Right. Some perspective now from our wonderful Haiti McKinley. Haiti, what do you have to offer on this subject?
Well, I have agreed with Eleanor for years and years. And of course, being the age I am, I am
almost 95.
I worry about my death, and I would like to be able to have some control. I'm not saying that I will kill myself, but having material in my hand to make it possible just in case would make my life entirely better, much, much better.
1-800-348-2551. Are you with these two ladies? Do you have a different view? So, Eleanor, I guess the question you get a lot in your advocacy of this is, what about the kid who pushes Mama from the train?
I think that slippery slope argument is a fallacy. There are 5 states right now that have physician aid in dying. And I do have some statistics. Oregon's had 17 years of experience beginning in 1998. In that year, there were 24 prescriptions for lethal drugs. In 2014, there were 155. And of that, one-third of the people who had those drugs did not use them, but they were comforted by the knowledge that should they need to, they had them. So I think the slippery slope argument is a fallacy.
Why is it a fallacy? I mean, there certainly are greedy kids who want their parents gone.
Of course, there's evil wherever you look, but that's not a reason for preventing the use of peaceful and good means to end people's death. You can put in adequate safeguards. Right now, there is a bill before the New York State Senate, and it would prevent the prosecution of physicians who aid patients. You might have to have two physicians verifying that the medication is necessary. You might have to have some legal counsel to make sure that this is the dying person's will. The idea of a greedy child killing a parent does not obviate the necessity for future movement on this topic.
Katie, you want to check in?
Yeah, I'd like to talk about the conversation. We've had one conversation about sex. Now, this is the other conversation we really should have, and it's just as difficult, if not more difficult, than to talk about sex, because kids don't want to do that. They don't want to talk to their parents about dying.
Yeah.
Very, very difficult.
Should everybody have a conversation like that? I'm 73. You may not think as a 95-year-old that that's old, but I think it's old. Should I say to my kids, listen, you know, what should I say?
Absolutely. You should tell them what you want. Mm-hmm. Do you want to be left alone and wait until you die of pneumonia or whatever you're going to die? Would you like some help? What would you like? What would you like your kids to do? They should know what you want, but it's difficult to get them to face that.
Okay, we've got a Carrie in New Paltz.
All right.
Carrie, you're on. Go.
Hi. I'm just totally in support of patients' rights in this regard, and I've felt that way for many years. I felt the same way about putting animals down and thinking if people are suffering, they should have that right to decide and choose. And also, I'm in support of green burials where people can be buried without being pumped full of formaldehyde. You know, I'm a person who has never been into using a lot of pharmaceutical drugs in my life, and I also don't want to be buried full of chemicals that pollute the ground. So I'd like to throw that comment in.
I thank you. I thank you for doing that, Carrie. I appreciate it very much. Thanks for calling.
Appreciate it. I know there's some organizations and some places where people can get green burials, but a lot of cemeteries don't allow it. That's crazy to me. We're polluting our ground source, you know?
Yep. Thank you, Carrie.
You're welcome.
Okay. Alan, can I pop in? An alternative to a funeral is to donate your body and your organs to a medical school so that your organs can be used for people who might need them and your body can be used for training the next generation of physicians.
Right, you are. The question Carrie raised was of organizations. Which organizations can you tell us about, Eleanor?
Okay, there are a bunch of organizations that address the issue of physician aid in dying or the right to die. There is the Final Exit Network, and I read just a guiding principle?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. We hold that mentally competent adults who suffer from a fatal or irreversible physical illness, from intractable physical pain, have a basic human right to choose to end their lives when they judge the quality of their life to be unacceptable. The mission is to work toward obtaining the basic human right of competent adults to make this choice, to raise awareness of Americans, and to promote the use of advanced directives and related legal instruments.
Okay, now, Eleanor, what is the name of the organization again?
Final Exit Network, and they have a website.
Okay, great. Okay, so we're going to take a short break, and we will be right back.
So
support comes from Washington County Tourism, announcing Raptor Festival this Saturday and Sunday at Gallup Ridge Farm, live bird of prey programs, demonstrations, exhibits, guided walks, and more. WashingtonNYCounty.com. Flurry Lumber, Route 10, East Hampton, Massachusetts, providing information and advice for sprucing up current or adding new decks. From exotic hardwoods to composite decking, offering delivery, FlurryLumber.com. Poughkeepsie Farm Project, connecting food, farm, and community. Organically grown CSA shares now available for the 2015 season, farmproject.org. And Fidelis Care, offering health insurance coverage for children and adults of all ages in New York State. FidelisCare.org.
And we are back. We are delighted to be back. We're talking about a very difficult subject. We all know it. It's end of life. There are many of us who would like to be able to determine when our lives should be over. You know, Haiti, I know I've talked to you about this before, but my mother used to walk around with a bottle of Seconal, and she used to say, "This is my nursing home." But she never did it. but that's what she said.
Yes, just knowing that you can is incredibly helpful. That's what I'd like to know, to have. Knowing that I can, I'm not likely to use it, but your mother was quite right.
You know, this is a terribly interesting subject. 1-800-348-2551. We have an email here. At age of 8, I was from Abigail. I was sent to the Jewish National Home for Asthmatics in Denver, Colorado. At the age of 8, I watched and was told by the nurses and my young friends died that they had been sent home. Home was death. I have no fear of death, however. I do fear being a burden. I've done a great deal of work with hospice, and I believe that we have the right to die with dignity. Ellen, thanks for taking my comments. We, of course, are delighted to take your comments. And Peter in New Paltz says, the only rational argument I've ever heard against assisted suicide is that sometimes the reason for doing it is lack of effective palliative care. It exists, but it is often unavailable, so death might be preferable if it were available. And certainly should be, there might be less suicide. Let's go to Daniel in Sullivan County. Okay, Daniel, you're on.
How are you, sir? It's so great to be on NPR, and I want to say God bless you for being 95. I got to say, I definitely agree that you should have your own right and your own, you know, choice to choose when you want to pass on, because you know, what you go through and pain is just too much. I had a father, 99, who passed away in 1999. He, you know, passed away from HIV. And he was in so much pain where, you know, unfortunately he passed away in a very, you know, painful, you know, situation. So if it was his choice, I remember him saying he wished he could have, you know, took it upon himself because of just what he went through. So I definitely support this type of humanity advocacy. I think it should be passed. I totally agree.
Daniel, thank you so much for your very good call. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right. Let's go to Johanna. Long time, Johanna. You're on.
Good afternoon. Thank you very, very much for this program. I'm going to be 87 soon. I want to say that the independence that is particularly preached in this country, all people's lives, at the end of life, all kinds of people come in and tell the person, you may die in this fashion, it will take this long, they don't know, etc. So this is a contrast that needs to be addressed, because then people need really to be independent and not think that the greatest medical bills are going to be run up to keep them living for another week.
Thank you, Johanna, for that opinion. I appreciate it very much.
And the second thing is that so many people go with dementia, and you can observe it in yourself every day, slowly. And if Alzheimer's sets in, and if you are out of it, particularly those people no longer have the capability and wouldn't be judged able to make a judgment on what they want and can do. The paperwork seems immense. If I had to do it now, it would be forbidding for me now. And I'm pretty clear in my head yet most of the time, thank God.
Well, Johanna, would you do it on your own is the question. In other words...
Certainly,
you know,
if I could. I have been a member of Final Exit for decades. And I think that that is the way that should be open to every person at the decision-making when your head and your mind and your person is clear enough to say, this is what is now the best thing.
Yeah, but Johanna, that's the dilemma. The dilemma is you might not want to do it while you have all your faculties. And then
Absolutely. Wait one second.
And when you don't have your faculties, then it's too late because people will say, we can't take advantage of somebody who doesn't know what they're doing.
Yes, exactly. But the right to do it and decide should be yours. It is a lonely time, even if you have, like I, a wonderful son who is an adult with whom you can really openly talk. Think of that good fortune.
Yeah. But I'm still not sure whether I'm on board with you here. I mean, what happens? You get the dementia, or you get Alzheimer's, and obviously this is a very tough time to say that you should be allowed to make your choices. Am I wrong about that?
No, you're not. I'm sure that you, at that time, are unable. But what it entails is awful. I still remember Kevorkian's case with this lady who took her life with his help years back because she knew what was coming and decided it's time to go.
Okay, Johanna, we have a lot of people behind you. I thank you for your wonderful call. Thanks very much.
So much. Bye.
Bye. We'll go to Ellen in Ellenville. Ellenville,
yes.
You're there. Let me just give
the
phone number, 1-800-348-2551. Go, Ellen.
Sure. Listen, Alan, I appreciate all your shows, but this really is good being that I'm 75 and, you know, getting closer. I do want to say the people you have on your show today are very wonderful, and I agree with a lot of things they're saying and doing and the organizations they belong to. However, I am more of an independent type of person. I think that we all need to step up and take more control of our lives and certainly take control of our deaths. Now, there's all different comments and so forth, but if you know what's coming and you don't want to go through it, then we all have the right to take our own life. Now, call it suicide or take your own life, but we can do this alone. We don't need a doctor or document.
Yeah, but wait, Ellen, from Ellenville, I love that. Haney McKinley is here with us. She's an outstanding social worker. And obviously, people go into bouts of depression. They go in early, and they come to you, Haney, and they say, I want to commit suicide. And you have, I'm sure, in your time, stopped a lot of people from doing that.
Yes, you know, that doesn't happen too often. The people walk in and say, I want to commit suicide. They'll say, my life stinks, I don't like it. But
what if they do? If they're 41 years old and they come into you, and you're a psychiatric social worker and an excellent one, everybody says so, and they come into your practice and they say, I'm 41 years old, I have no health problems, but, you know, and you know how to listen to people, so, yeah, I'm a little tired of life.
But that's a different story than what we're talking about. I would certainly not support that.
But, Alan, listen, he owns his own life, this 41-year-old. This is what I'm trying to make today for everybody out there. You own your own darn life. And if you want to take it, go ahead. And nobody would be or should be, and don't let them be able to stop you. Now, if enough suicides rack up on the statistics, and most of them are elderly, it might juggle the brains of some of these bureaucrats to see that these laws that your guests want to have passed for
Ellen, would be approved. Ellen? Ellen,
yes.
We got it.
I'm sorry.
We got it. We understand it.
Okay.
Okay. Now, Ellen Arenstein, you have something to say about this?
Well, I think the issue is, should a person have the right to have physician aid in dying when that person is facing an end of life situation.
Of course they
we're
do.
Not
they
when
can have
Ellen
the
wait a minute.
No, Ellen, wait a minute is right. You had your say. Now it's time for
sorry, I apologize.
That's okay.
To everybody.
When a 41-year-old is suicidal, that's probably a psychiatric issue which can be addressed by good therapy and maybe some psychoactive medications. But when we're talking about the inevitable exit of a person who has lived his or her years, who's in serious decline, who may be in terrible physical pain and anguish, and we're talking about alleviating those final weeks or months.
Yes, and that's wonderful, and I hope the law gets passed tomorrow, but we both know it isn't going to be, and look at poor Dr. Kevorkian in jail and, you know, so forth, because he tried.
Okay,
so
got, Ellen, okay, we got five people behind you.
Okay.
Ellen Ehrenstein, I'm going to give you a fast chance. Now, Eleanor, you said something that got her, obviously, her dander up, which is it's not going to pass. Now, I happen to agree with you. I happen to think it's going to be a hard sell to get it passed in the state legislature. Yeah. But, Eleanor, you think there's a chance it'll pass?
Right now, there is a bill before the Senate, and it is Bill S-3885.
Okay, yeah, with that, we got that. Now, tell us why you think it might pass in the whole legislature, including the assembly.
I'm not sure that it will pass, but it's kind of worthy of note that
well,
there
look,
is
there
a bill.
10,000 bills that get put into the legislature every year, most of which, almost all of which, don't pass. So all you need is one guy to put in a bill saying end of life, that's too bad. I mean, that's the way it is.
That's why I'm saying the more suicide rates rack up and get higher and higher, the legislature might decide, it's time to pass the bill and will help the people who are still left behind.
Okay. That's your comment. I don't agree with you. I agree with you that it would be good to have the bill. I just don't agree with you that it's getting there. So, Ellen, thank you very much for calling.
Thank you. Bye.
Let's go to Julie in Amsterdam. Julie in Amsterdam, you're on.
Hi, I'm a nurse, and I see people at the end of their life all the time, and I'm a huge, huge believer in having a physician-assisted death. I think that it's almost inhumane, especially when the family has to watch these things, and they don't understand the end-of-life process. It is true. It is a taboo. People don't want to talk about it. Even nurses and doctors don't want to talk about it with the patients. And then the families watch, and they don't know what's happening. And it's agony on both sides, for the patient and the family.
I had a doctor friend who used to tell me that doctors have been known to help things along without any law being passed.
I've had patients ask me to do it. I've had family members ask me, like, isn't there anything you can do to end this? And I'm like, I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do.
Sure.
I try to keep them informed. I try to keep them comfortable. I've also had doctors who did not want to give the appropriate amount of pain medication for people because they had their renal function wasn't.
Right. Julie, thank you for the great call and your perspective.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Haiti, you had some.
Yes, I was going to say some doctors are very reluctant to tackle that issue. In my situation, they have said to me, "Oh, you live to be 100," as if this, you know, would take care of the situation. Doctors would like not to be considered killers, as they say, and I can understand that. Nevertheless, I think we need to train doctors.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to Alan in Turner's Falls. Alan, you're on.
Hi, yes, just a brief little comment that I've got. What's next? I mean, if we accept the fact that someone can take their own life on their own decision and mindset, I don't know, a generation later, are we now going to accept that someone can make a decision that this individual who does not have the capacity is wasting away in a, I don't know, an insane asylum or whatever it may be, that this person can be euthanized? How far down this path are we going to start this to go before we become uncivilized from the beginning?
I'm glad you called, Alan. I don't agree with you, but I'm glad you called. Appreciate it very much.
Well, I just want to ask the caller, what would you like for your life?
What would I like for my life?
And your death, yes.
I'm 50, and from a future standpoint, I see myself on a DNR, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, it is what it is. If you change the rule and anyone can make that particular decision. I'm only saying, what's going to happen to us as a society on the next step? Where are we going to be bringing this to?
Five states at this time have legalized physician aid in dying. Vermont was one of the most recent, and in none of those states are there any abuses, nor are there any large numbers.
Sure, that's today. And you're talking about 100 and something in Oregon versus the whatever the initial number that you mentioned earlier. That's 100. We're talking about millions of people.
And we're talking about millions of people who probably have done it over the years themselves without any doctors, two doctors, a psychiatrist, or anybody else, Alan. But I thought Haiti's question was a fair one to you. You're 50 now. You're in good health. What if you were, 90 and you were facing the end? Would you want that right?
I would want my end to be as my end, I guess. I wouldn't want anyone making the decision for me.
Well, what about your making the decision for you?
Well, I always have control of that aspect unless I'm totally unable to do it. By the time that I'm 90 years old, I don't believe I'd be able to put a gun to my head.
Alan, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much, and I'm really glad you called. Okay, let's go to Steve in Poughkeepsie. Steve, you're on.
Hello.
Hey.
Yeah, I just really appreciate the show. Both my parents died long, painful deaths, one from cancer, one from heart problems. And it was against their religion in some ways to, if even had been allowed, but it was terrible. It was just horrible for the family, horrible for them. And like one of the speakers you have today, I have an Airedale that was a wonderful dog that got old and was very sick and in pain. And like them, I took him to the vet and an injection, and he died very peacefully with me and my family right there. It was very sad, but it was also beautiful. I was so relieved that he hadn't suffered at all. And I think there needs to be a balance. I think it should be up to the individual, and with lots of controls. I just hope it will happen at some point. I know I don't want to go through what my parents went through for myself or my wife or people I care about.
And it's bound to happen, I think.
I hope so. I hope that people, if not that it would be forced on anyone. And the other thing is, this may sound crass, and I don't mean it crass, but we have limited resources, and the expense to prolong the pain was awful, too. The insurance paid for it, so I can say it didn't cost us anything, but it was still a terrible waste of that as well.
Steve, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much. Okay, I'm going to read a couple of things that have come in over the internet. What about the willingness to wait through illness for science to come up with a cure for whatever is killing us? Yeah, there are those people who say, okay, I have cancer or I have Alzheimer's, and then there's always a hope that the cure will come while you're still alive, and they could give you an injection, and then you'll be okay. That's a reasonable thing to say, I suspect. Jeff says, I think it's that any realistic person could agree that the stigma surrounding merciful assisted suicide for the suffering terminally ill comes from religious dogma. Separation of church and state is constantly ignored, and it causes terrible suffering in our population and hinders our pursuit of happiness. This is a secular country, and it's time for our leaders to start to respect that. That's from Jeff. And good afternoon to today's wonderful guest, to the lovely lady who's been married for 57 years. Please tell us, what is the secret of staying happily married?
I think it's being kind, and it's treating your husband as your best friend and expecting that in return.
Okay. Thank you, Mark, for that one. And we did that one. Okay. So we've done all of these, and let's go back to the phones. We have a lot of people on the phones. Wow. Let's go to Barbara of Golden Ridge. Barbara, you got one.
It's Golden's Bridge, Alan.
Of course it is. Go ahead.
I'm in my car. We've been in Ulster County. We've been having many death cafes where people come and talk about end-of-life issues. And one of the things that we point out is how important it is to have your wishes in writing, to have advance directives, and to tell the people who love you and know you what it is you want at the end of your life.
Well, you're absolutely right. But Eleanor, I see you nodding your head on this, but of course, you don't have the right to say, put me to death or at the end of your life.
I think what the caller is referring to is a healthcare proxy and a living will, and hoping that the healthcare proxy will prevail upon any physicians who are treating you at the end to opt for intensive palliative care in the absence of legalized physician aid in dying in New York.
Barbara, thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay. Let's go to Father John in Johnsonfield. Hey, Father John, I want to stop for a minute. Stay tuned, stay on, because we just have to take a couple of seconds for a little bit of business here.
Support comes from Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, offering organic and local groceries, working to build a healthy and sustainable community. Berkshire.coop. Fort Hill Auto Body, Amherst, Massachusetts, locally owned and operated since 1997, providing auto body repair, detailing, painting, and glass replacement. A proud supporter of public radio, FortHillAutoBody.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. And Hudson Valley Federal Credit Union, a local financial cooperative offering business checking, commercial loans, online banking, and more. HVFCU.org.
And we're back with Haiti McKinley and Eleanor Aronstein, and we've got all of you. And Father John, you're on, right?
Hi.
How are you doing? Go ahead.
Doing good today, and I can see you're all people of goodwill. I'm a Catholic priest in the Berkshires, and I work with immigrants, I work with Americans. As other callers have brought up, speaking with your family about end-of-life issues is very important. You can send your loved ones, save your loved ones a lot of anguish if you let them know what you expect and what you don't expect, what your wishes are. As far as euthanasia, what this is, assisted suicide, of course, my church teaches that all life is sacred from natural conception to natural death, and we're against capital punishment. But as I said, I see you people are goodwill and you're bringing up some good points. But I'm in hospitals and nursing homes all the time, and I see people denied care now, people being discharged early when they really need care. What's going to happen when, you know, insurance companies say, here, we'll pay for your assisted suicide, but we're not going to pay for X, Y, and Z that could keep you comfortable or prolong your life? That's a danger that, we, you know, it's not brought up, and it's a very real danger. So,
I think Eleanor would like to speak up on this.
I think all of the states that currently have physician aid in dying, and that is the correct term, not assisted suicide, physician aid in dying, have safeguards in place so that there is no coercion and there is nothing that the patient does not want.
But Eleanor, I don't think that's John's point, Father John's point.
No. I'm saying right now, right now, supposedly everybody has access to health care. But I see, it's happening now where people are, there's a limit to how long they can stay in the hospital. There's a limit to how much care they can get, rehabilitation care they can get in a nursing home. And there are people who, if their family puts up a fight, they get more care. But then there's people who are, elderly, their family lives far away, and it's just beyond them to deal with the system, and they're denied care. And you're saying in good faith that this should be the person's choice, but just think what could happen. How insurance companies could get around this, and it's very possible.
Well, Father John, I have to tell you, I'm delighted you called, even though I don't agree with you on this, but I have to tell you, you sound like a great guy. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Don. Bye.
Bye. Well, let's go to Gina in Saratoga. Gina, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, Alan.
Sure.
I have a question. I was raised Catholic, but this actually was something that was put into my mind by my grandfather, who was a Southern Baptist, and he lost his life at a very young age to cancer. And it keeps coming up in my mind when these discussions come up. He always believed that if you didn't bring yourself into this world, how are you certain that you can get yourself out of this world? It's kind of a philosophical question, but
Well, wait a second. I'm not sure I agree with it. Understand it, Gina. He's saying he didn't have the choice to create himself. That's right. We all know that.
What about the prime movers of our own lives? What actually happens if you take your own life? Like, that's just a question. I've got no answer for it, and I would never find fault with anyone.
The idea that you would not be allowed to go to heaven if you committed suicide?
No. I don't believe that. I just think that we are also spirit, you know, and I would hope. I don't know, and that's just why I asked the question, because I think a lot of people have beliefs in God, and I've been with my grandparents when they passed, and you're just very conscious of the fact that it's not just about the body, it's a lot about the spirit and the soul.
Fair enough, Gina. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much. Okay, let's go to Olivia in Albany. Olivia.
Hi, this is Tom. It's not Olivia.
Oh, I see. Your number. I see exactly what happened here. I'm so sorry, Tom. Go ahead.
The thing I have assisted with this, and I was nursing when AIDS was basically AZT or death, and there were a lot of people who did find ways of committing suicide, and I certainly told them what I knew and what I knew worked. I did not assist in anything directly.
Do insurance plans pay off? If somebody has a life insurance policy and they commit suicide, it's my understanding that insurance companies don't insure that.
That is my understanding, too, and I'm glad you brought that up because I had mentioned that this is what I wanted to discuss. And it seems to me that if there's a person who's 80 years old and has a life insurance policy that is going to perhaps provide for his wife in her end of life so that it would have a quality that he didn't have but he had paid into this in good faith and has made this decision that the insurance company should certainly pay for her care and her well-being if someone had. The one thing I would be very leery about is somebody taking out $1 million life insurance policy and the next day committing suicide.
Mm, mm.
And I know that life insurance policies do not cover suicide, but this is, again, is an issue that should be discussed here.
No, and let me just say,
it needs to be discussed.
Yeah. Let me just say, Tom, I thank you for calling. I thank you for raising the whole insurance aspect of this. Very important, but I want to get to the five people who are behind you. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Let's go to Olivia. Now, Olivia, you're on. Go.
Hi, Alan. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to say that I agree with Ellen, the previous caller, who said that everyone should have a right to determine. And it's true. For me, I you know, the way I see it is you don't have a choice coming in. You should definitely have a choice as to how you leave. And the only people, there are other people who are in conditions of suffering that aren't exactly bedridden. There are people who are struggling or who have been struggling lifelong mental health issues and things like that. I would like to see it extended because there are people that really do feel like they're done. And if they're done, they're done. Because whether you give an okay or not, eventually they're going to do it. So I think it should be compassionate and I think it should be an experience that is comforting
okay.
for everyone.
Olivia, I don't want to cut you off, but our wonderful Haiti McKinley has something to say. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that some countries have extended that. It is a difficult problem if we're talking about mental illness. But Holland, for instance, has handled that problem. Also, we should really take...
Well, how have they handled it, as long as you raise it?
How do they handle it?
You said they've handled it.
Yes, I don't know.
Okay, but they've handled it.
Holland allows physicians to prescribe medication.
I see.
Which will end a life.
I see. Okay. And there are those people who would say that is a very slippery slope.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So, Olivia, I got to go because we got so many people behind you, but thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Very quickly, we've heard from somebody The major problem with today's discussion is the fact that people keep referring to a so-called right to die. We might have the ability to choose the time and manner of our death with assisted suicide, but I think we should be very careful about labeling this ability as a right. We have, as a society, gone too far along the slippery slope towards euthanasia, largely because people fear pain and embrace the strange idea that choosing when to die makes someone more independent. And I'm not reading it because it's way too long, but not everyone agrees with this. But even those who do not should not be so hubristic as to suggest that suffering is necessarily meaningless. Well, I don't know what it is. Let's go to Joanne in Bloomville. Okay, Joanne, you're on.
Hi. Thank you very much for bringing this up. It's such a timely topic. I would like to see a central number similar to 911 where an individual's last wishes could be known and legally respected by medical personnel.
No, how would that work? Interesting
idea.
Well,
I'm not sure. You know, I've thought about it for a while. I'm thinking maybe even insurance companies would be interested in this, because if you have a healthcare proxy that you filled out and it's on your refrigerator, it's in the file cabinet, it may not be accessible in a timely manner.
Okay, so let's say, let me just see, because of time. You think you want to die, you're suffering, and so you dial 211.
Alan, this is not what I'm saying.
Okay.
This is addressing the healthcare proxy issue more, where if something were to happen, instead of having life-extending unwanted medical attention, if you collapse in your house and the ambulance comes, there would be a place where you could have your last wishes respected. That's all.
Okay. Thank you, Joanne. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay. Let's go to Sue in Valencia. Sue in Valencia, you're on.
Hi, Alan.
Hey.
I'm a nurse, and I have worked with a lot of dying patients.
Yep.
I totally support, you know, physician-assisted end-of-life issues, but as a Catholic, I do have some faith-based issues with it. And one of the things, I think it kind of balances off that note you just read, suffering being useless. As a Catholic, life is respected, and I look at what mission we have to others, and I know I have learned a lot personally from the people who are dying.
But that's you.
Pain.
Wait, Sue, I hope you don't take this the wrong way. You're Catholic. You have views on this. Why should I, who don't share your views, be constricted by your views?
Oh, I'm not saying that. I totally support a physician-assisted end of life. I don't think people should have to suffer the way they do. But I do think there's a bigger issue sometimes in terms of what the lesson is from that suffering.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to see someone suffer, but it isn't totally in vain.
Okay, Sue, you're terrific. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much. Okay, let's go to Audrey in Schenectady. Audrey, you're on.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had two comments. One, my brother's wife committed suicide 3 months ago at age 47, and she had been suffering from very severe mental illness her whole life, and she felt like that was the only way that she could get out of her suffering. And the second one is that I'm 63, and I have never had a whole lot of control over my life, so I at least want to have control over my death. And when I decide I want to go, like the gals were saying in the beginning, you know, it's having that, like your mom, the bottle of Secanol. So, you know, if you can.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, right?
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Okay, right. Bye-bye.
And now we'll go to Mary in Wolverham. Okay, Mary, where are you?
Hi, I'm in Wolverham, Massachusetts.
Okay.
And I'm actually terminally ill at this moment. I'm a mother, and I've been through several years of fruitless treatment, and I live in a great deal of pain. So I've been looking into this issue for a bit now. And I'd just like to add that whether or not we actually use the medication, there is such a comfort to us knowing that towards the end, we won't die in pain if we have access to this medication, because they found in the studies of people with cancer like myself that our fear is more from the manner in which we die, in the fact that we may suffer greatly at the end, rather than the actual disease process itself.
It gives you some control.
Absolutely. I've seen genetically in my family, my grandfather and my cousin suffered. It went to their brain at the end. It was horrific. I don't want that for myself. I don't want my children seeing that for me. And if I could have a prescription where we could, you know, handle this peacefully, I would much prefer that.
Mary, thank you for that wonderful call. I'm trying to get to everybody. Thank you so much. Let's go to Audrey in Schenectady. Okay, Audrey, you're in.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Who's this?
I think I misdialed. Is this Vox Pop?
This is Vox Pop. Who are you?
Oh, okay. Hi, this is Marcel.
Okay, Marcel.
I just wanted to clarify something about the life insurance on suicide.
Oh, yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Life insurance will pay on suicides as long as they are not committed within the first 2 years of the policy.
Is that true?
So it is true in Massachusetts and should be for most companies. I would check your policy to make sure. But the idea with a two-year exclusion, most insurance companies don't want you to know that. But if your intention is to simply commit suicide to collect money, of course, you're going to wait more than 2 years to do that.
Okay. I got you. And thank you so much. You know, obviously, we're not lawyers and we're not able to speak to this, but I thank you for adding your voice to this. Thank you very much. Let's go to Audrey. I think that's Audrey. No, that's not right. This is all screwed up. Okay, let's go to Rosalie in Chicago. Rosalie in Chicago, you're on.
Thank you.
Oh, no, Rosalie, you're breaking the world. You're breaking the rule. You have your radio on. You got to turn your radio off because there's a delay. Can you do that real fast?
Oh, it's not the radio. It's my computer.
Well, you got to turn that off. Whatever it is, I'm hearing it. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead, Rosalie. It's on you.
I wanted to address the caller who was talking about suffering. And I think the point has to be made that when we talk about physician aid in dying and people choosing to die, we refer to people whose suffering is unbearable. And I think that word needs to be included because some people, obviously, don't find suffering unbearable. They may find it ennobling, but not everybody does. And we should have the right to decide for ourselves whether or not we want to suffer.
Well, I thank you so much for that wonderful call and those wonderful remarks. Thank you. And let's see. We're going to try to go here. Is this Paul?
Yes.
Okay, Paul, what do you got?
Oh, I didn't know I was on. I'm a lawyer and a life insurance consultant in New York, and suicide after the policy is 2 years old is covered under a life insurance policy.
Interesting. Well, Paul, you've confirmed what our other lawyer had to say, and thank you so much for doing that.
You got it.
Appreciate that very, very much. Okay. So, ladies, this has been quite a program. Can we both very quickly say one sentence? One sentence.
Okay. On April 9th at the William Sanford Town Library on Albany Shaker Road in Colony, there's going to be a presentation on death with dignity in New York at 12:15.
Okay, that's great. And Haiti?
These have been wonderful, wonderful calls, and I hope we'll continue to talk about this very, very important issue.
So, thank you, Haiti. And we're just about out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in and apologize to those left on the line, which were none. I also want to thank our guests, Eleanor Arenstein and Haiti McKinley, for joining us. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Quality Foreign Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years, QFCC.com. Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York, working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding, web design and development, and graphic design for almost three decades, ShannonRose.com. And the NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses, nbtbank.com. Everybody, thanks for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at wamc.org/VoxPop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy, the wonderful Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Dan Goldstein, who did a terrific job. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.